In studio, I have Cormac Moore, historian in residence with the Dublin City Libraries from the North Central area. Hey, Cormac, how are you?
I know, good, thanks, good.
We were just talking before we came on air that this sinking of the Leinster, quite not very well known, really, and 100 year centenary. I think it's actually yesterday.
Wednesday. The 10th of October. It kind of, we were talking obviously about Titanic and Lusitania, and obviously they had, you know, huge impact. But more Irish people died on the Leinster than both of those disasters.
A couple of hundred people, like, it was a lot.
Over 540 died in Leinster.
I think it was a little more than that, Cormac, but because
the official stats was just over 500, but it's at least 540. But the exact number is not known. They're about just under 800 on the boat, but the very large majority of those died. So it is well over 500 now. Yeah. But some figures I've read about says 540. You know, but it's definitely over the official figure.
And the irony, I suppose, a lot of soldiers coming home from war.
Yeah, it was. A lot of soldiers. There were about 500 soldiers on the ship. So there's about, I think, 77 crew. There was 22 postal workers. There was 180 civilians, and about 500 soldiers. Now, soldiers, when they're on leave, now, some of them were coming home, I'd imagine, but, you know, were injured nobody knew the war was going to end within a month, of course.
That's the other ironic thing.
Yeah, it's just like the war ended on the 11th of November, so literally just shy of a month. This sinking of the ship, this torpedo struck it. Soldiers, actually, if you were a soldier and you're on leave, you were allowed travel. You got a free travel pass to travel anywhere around the British Isles. Mm-hmm. On your leave. So some people went to Ireland, where there was less activity. They weren't as involved in the war, you know, perhaps as Britain, and they were coming back. So the ship left Dunleary to go to Holyhead. So, there were about 500 soldiers, and they were from all over the world. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's Irish, Welsh, English, Scottish, American, Canadian. Australia, New Zealand. So it's a good mix of soldiers from all over the kind of allied countries. It has been in many ways forgotten about. It has definitely been remembered. You know, Dunleary County Council has done a lot of work on it, as well as Holyhead in Wales. The remembrance has really built up over the last few years, because there's so many tragic stories.
It was a civilian ship in the first place, and I think there was a mute on the press as well. They were told to keep it quiet.
Well, even Hurler actually did reports of the sinking. They didn't mention much casualties, though, so maybe the British press should have left them keep on reporting. But because they didn't get approval from the censor, they were closed down for a short period because they actually published without permission from the censor. So, you know, it was muted. There was also talk there should be a public inquiry. The British, stopped any notions of that. There was a lot of uncertainty. There was a lot of rumours built up around it. Why wasn't the ship protected well enough? Other ships didn't come to the raid, you know, they were passing by because, of fear of being struck by torpedoes. There's also claims that there were gunshot wounds in some of the bodies found. So, you know, who was shooting, if there were just torpedoes? And there's also like scurrilous kind of claims that men were, jumping on life rafts before women and children, So all of these things, all these, murky questions were asked, but there's no answers, except now we've got some testimonies from relatives, people who survived, their relatives and so on, who kind of give their view of that story. And I don't necessarily have an agenda, but that's very good testimony from those witnesses who did leave behind memories.
Yeah, and I think in the cases of some of them too that survived, it's like a lot of the soldiers that survived the war or anything traumatic that happened to them in their lives.
Yeah.
A lot of them just didn't want to talk about it.
Oh, absolutely not, yeah. I've recently spoke with a Spanish flu, and every family was pretty much respected by the Spanish flu, but there was a certain stigma to it as well. So people shut up shop very quickly talking about it, and that's why it was kind of buried for years, the Spanish flu, and people didn't want to really talk about their family experiences with it. Same with this traumatic experience of the Leinster, it was a forgotten about story in many ways. maybe we'll go through the day itself. You know, like the ship took off from Dunleary at 9 o'clock. Literally half an hour into it, it was spotted by a U-boat, submarine U-123, and it started firing torpedoes. The first one missed. The second one, breached the hull. Actually, it hit the postal sorting room. And this ship, it was a civilian ship, and it did transport soldiers during the war. But one of the main things it did was actually sort mail. So there actually were postal sorters from Dublin, mm-hmm. who were, whilst they're on the ship, they're actually sorting the mail. There's 22 of those on board, and 21 of them died. Like one of them, Adam Smith, he left his wife and 9 children behind him. You know, so it's awful. There's a lot of tragic stories along with him. The second one was the ship was sinking once the second torpedo, the first one that struck, hit. So the ship tried to turn around to escape further torpedoes, but another one hit, and that was it. That was the ship was destroyed after that. So it sank very quickly, and most people died with that explosion, but some did survive. It took 2.5 hours for rescue ships to come. So people were actually, just waiting if they could swim, or holding onto a piece of wood or whatever they could find. Obviously, many of them didn't survive. Like there's some heroic stories as well. Like there's one of a William Marr. He held on to a 13-year-old girl, Dorothy Toppin, for 2.5 hours before a rescue boat came. And he went in and out of water about 15 times trying to help other people. Mm-hmm. There is that story. Like, and it's understandable as well. Other boats were passing by. They saw it. But there was fears if they go in that area, they were going to be struck by torpedoes as well. Mm-hmm. So they didn't. Some boats didn't actually come to the rescue earlier than they could have.
So it was only half hour in. I thought it was near to Dunleary when it happened.
It was near Dunleary because it was literally, it left Dunleary at 9 o'clock, just half an hour later.
So I'm getting it wrong. It wasn't even Holyhead.
It was going towards Holyhead. So okay. It had just left Dunleary, and so half an hour in. So.
And there was talk at that time Dunleary didn't have, even though they did get a lot of people and rescue them, that the ambulance service, I don't think they really had one in Dunleary at that time. I heard that as well. So I'm sure that is as well. Any idea how many survived?
Well, we don't know. As I said, there's about, 780 passengers on board, including crew. So people on board, including crew. And as I said, there is that difference. The official figure was over 500 died, but more estimates around 540, 550, I've heard. So you're talking about, over 200 people who survived, perhaps, But it's still not known. The official figures have never been known. So there is still a lot of research being done on that.
And it was never inquired into, was it?
No, the British shut it down, basically. Okay. And there were questions, why wasn't there protection? Yeah. It was considered an act of war, and the Leinster was armed. So the direct has shown there was the unfired shells there. Mm-hmm. So, was it a legitimate target? There's never been any kind of a question of the Germans being brought up for, crimes against humanity with it. It was considered, the Germans considered any boats on the Irish Sea as legitimate targets. Mm. And that's what it has been.
I know that as well. I think the actual U-boat, the guy that was the captain, I think he was only in his 20s as well, and they were all pretty young aboard, and I think they hit a depth charge.
They didn't survive for much longer themselves.
Okay, and but there's lots of things you say in the Centurion. There's an exhibition about it at the moment in the National Maritime Museum in Dunleary, but there's lots of things happening around.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talks, and obviously the anniversary is gone now. It was the 10th of October, but there's loads happening this month and the next couple of months. Just have a look online, in your various different libraries and so on. In newspapers, there is a lot of events to market. There is some really good, and the postal workers, that kind of perspective has been talks on that. Even in Dublin City Archives, actually, there's a great paper. It's called the Edward Lee Papers. They were a very well-known draper family around Dublin. Mm-hmm. And tragically, the family had lost a son that year, 1918, in Gallipoli. And then they lost another son, Robert Lee, Robert Ernest Lee, on board Leinster. He was on leave as well as a soldier. And so it was very tragic. And there's very poignant letters. Mm-hmm. On the day of the Leinster, the family weren't sure. Well, I think we might have lost Robert. We haven't heard from him. He was on the boat. and then the next day it was confirmed that he did die. So mm-hmm. you know, there is some really good archives you can find of
and the funny thing about it is when you say the mail boat, I mean I can think back to lots of times when I mean ongoing actually emigration, but a lot of Irish people used the mail boat, as they used to call it then, to go backwards and forwards to London.
Yeah, of course.
That's what it was called. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, even though
it was also called the cat boat, but anyway.
But it was a part of it, the mail boat. But I say most of it, before the war, there was a kind of four of those type of boats, like all named after the four provinces.
Yeah.
And they were to deliver mail, but also passengers. So, and they probably did a lot more delivering of passengers than mail. But it was just because they were sorting mail on board, it was just. And it was based on mail times as well, you know, in terms of what times they ran and so on. So that's why they're called mail boats. But because of the war, the soldiers took precedence mm-hmm. for those boats. They mm-hmm. were commandeered as such. So that's why there was a lot more soldiers than there were civilian passengers mm-hmm. and crew.
Yeah, the reason I'm saying that is because I'm sure there's a lot of people sitting at home listening to us now and talking about travelling and that maybe spent so many years away.
And
came back. On top of that, as you said, they were all called after the four provinces. But the use of the mail boat, as I say, for immigration over the years, it amazes me that it has never come out before in any sort of big way. That, you know, it's been, I mean, I know it was muted at the time, but you imagine like talk. But I think even
about the Leinster.
I worked in Dunleary for many, many years. And I never heard anything about it at all.
Because of this decade of commemorations, you know, a lot of new angles. So even the Rising, I thought it was a great year because it wasn't just about the big set pieces and the GPO and elsewhere, the main political leaders of Pearson, Connolly, and so on. You know, it was about women's experiences, children's experiences. Even the British soldiers' experiences, so a lot more nuanced look at history now, and that's what we're finding, with this decade. That, as I said, Spanish flu. That's
I was going to say. Only a lot of research about that now.
There's been a lot of research only recently. Now it's kind of forgotten about, And same with tragedies like the Leinster. There is a lot more work being done on other aspects of history that, and even the social aspects of history now, which were never studied or were looked down upon in many ways, mm-hmm. now are taken front and centre with a lot of academics. And my own, initial research was on sport history, which is a very new field, but it's there's some great stuff being written about and researched over the last 10, 15, 20 years.
Well, if you want, just to ask you as a tidbit, anything is coming up in that's surprising you? I mean, you didn't know about this, or I didn't know about this, and thousands of people didn't know about this. Anything coming up in your research on sport that's surprising you?
Well, there's always new stuff coming up. My focus at the moment is on the kind of the Irish soccer split and researching that. So even the War of Independence, the attitudes, it's often kind of perceived that the GAA was this nationalist body and they all joined the Irish Volunteers and the IRA. That's not true. Most of them didn't join. Most of them just played sport. And also a lot of rugby players who were perceived as British by some and always considered to be, part of the empire and so on. Many of them actually, particularly in Munster and Connacht, were involved in the Irish Volunteers and fought in the War of Independence. Same with soccer players. There's a huge amount of soccer players who fought in the War of Independence. Cricket players too. So that's interesting. So it's not as clear cut as it often looks.
Yes, yeah.
That's one thing research does show you. No matter what area you look at and no matter what perceived assumption you had on the past, the more digging you do, you realise, things are a lot more complicated than first meets the eye.
As well as being complicated and some of the things being sort of buried to an extent, do you think that's an Irish thing? Or
no, I don't think so. I think it's worldwide. We all have perceptions no matter where we're from.
Okay.
And the more you educate yourself, the more research you do, I think you can get a better understanding and a more reasonable understanding, perhaps, than clinging on to perceived perceptions. I definitely don't think it's Irish. And one thing I found with studying sport history, even though we have this huge, big amateur organisation, which is quite unique, the GAA, our perceptions and our relationship with sport and politics and relationship with sport and society is very similar all around the world.
Okay, Cormac, I look forward to talking to some more history later on, but people can look up Leinster2018.com for all the details. A lovely little booklet out, as I say, as well, to mark the centenary, 100 years of the sinking of the RMS Leinster. Thank you very much, Cormac.
Thanks, Tom.
And that, of course, is Cormac Moore, historian in residence with the Dublin City Libraries North Centre. And he'll be back in a few weeks' time. Thanks, Cormac.